The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Professor Liam Fanning, Professor of Immunovirology at UCC, who do you reckon should be getting third shots of COVID vaccines?
I suppose the best way to answer that question, Matt, is to have a look and see where the data lies that shows it's actually of value. And I suppose, as usual, the best data, this is coming from the Israelis, and they did a study where they looked at 1.1 million Israelis over 60 who'd received a booster shot 5 months after their second shot. And what they found was that there were individuals who received the booster shot were 20 times less likely to have severe COVID than people of the same age group who had received only two jabs. And they were studied at a similar period and when Delta was prevalent in Israel. And I suppose also the analysis revealed that the third shot not only had an impact on the reduction of severe disease, but also had a considerable reduction in the fold of infection in that age group. In other words, those individuals that had breakthrough infections. So, you know, certainly those over 60, but I think the government have done it right here. You know, those over 80 in the community and those over 65 in care facilities. I imagine that group in the community who are over 80 will probably track downwards either 75 or 65, given the fact that the FDA have approved booster shots for individuals over 65 and above. It would seem that as we have a surplus of vaccines in this country, we have currently, I can see kind of an argument be made as to why that 65 to 80 group in the community would benefit from a booster shot.
Okay, but what about others? Speaking from personal experience, I know they've been double vaccinated doesn't mean that you don't get COVID. So are there people perhaps who have compromised immune systems who, even though they're double vaccinated, who are younger than those people who could do with a booster shot?
Well, the answer to that is it is possible because, you know, they don't know. But, I mean, to identify them is nearly an impossibility because we don't measure individual responses to the vaccine. And also, we're not quite sure exactly as to the correlates of immune protection and associated with antibody levels and ability to fight off COVID-19 infection. So, look, that's a bit of an unknown. But what we do know is that the double shot of the vaccine for the mRNA vaccine, as we know, Matt, gives great protection against serious disease and hospitalisation. So, even for those that are slightly immunocompromised, they're not starting from zero. They have an immunity, they have a capacity to fight this infection, which would be much better than if they weren't vaccinated.
I suppose people are thinking of those who might have been in the category 4 previously when we started the rollout of the vaccines, people with underlying conditions. If the hospital consultants have been given a certain degree of autonomy, aren't they, to actually decide as to whether some of those patients should get the third dose?
And that's the right decision. I think the consultants who know their patients best can decide whether their patient fits into a category of likely not responding to this vaccine as the way they should to give them protection.
Professor Liam Fanning, thank you very much for joining us. Daniel McConnell, political editor of the Irish Examiner, is with us as well. But is there the potential to have, like we had in the row about the initial rollout of the vaccine, to have people suddenly saying, well, actually, I think I should be getting a third dose, and this could become another political football for the government to handle?
I think the big difference now, Matt, is the surplus of supply, is that, you know, we're now in a position where, unlike where we were in January and February and March of this year, where there was a huge deficit vis-a-vis the demand, I think we're now in a position where we're now donating large stocks of our vaccine to other countries. So I think we're in a much different place. I do think you're right. There will probably be this clamour of either the elderly or those with underlying conditions who will probably say, listen, get me to the top of the queue now because I deserve it. But I think it's a much more benign situation than where we were.
Now, there's another political controversy that's developed, perhaps an unexpected one. This whole issue as to how much money should be given to public servants for the work they did in the pandemic, and who amongst those public sector workers should be rewarded or not. How difficult is this starting to get for the government?
Really difficult. So I ran the story on Monday morning saying that this was likely to happen in the budget, and everyone thought, grand, this is happy days, nice neat package, once off payment in either by way of a cash payment or by way of paid leave. But then, you know, people started asking, well, what about other groups? Does this apply to all public sector workers, and why should it only be a public sector worker initiative? Why not, like, what should, you know, those who stock the shelves in our shops at the teeth of the pandemic?
There were many private sector workers across our supermarkets,
many low paid as well,
very low paid, and a whole range. We've had bin men in touch, we've had people from post workers. There were lots of people who were regarded as essential workers who may have been working in the private sector and continue to work, and they're wondering, well, what about me?
Absolutely. And again, you're looking at the stage of, well, where do you draw the line in the public sector? So, you know, do you look at the people who, like the Garda Síochána, who were manning the, you know, the kind of the checkpoints? Do you look at the those who were literally turning COVID patients over in ICU wards, or carers who were going in and literally holding the hands of people as they die because their parent, you know, their family couldn't go in? I don't think anyone would have an objection to giving those sort of people a bonus. But where do you draw the line is the big difficulty from a government's perspective, because even if you narrow it down to certain categories, you know, does the secretary at the front desk of a hospital ward get included or not get included? Do the people who processed, you know, the PUP payment for 6 weeks, you know, in a couple of days, in something that would normally take a couple of years to roll out, do they, should, are they entitled to it? So as you tease it out, it becomes very, very complicated.
And then there's also the issue of time off and leave, because there are many people, particularly in our hospital services, saying they haven't even been able to use up their holidays, let alone be suddenly told they can have more time off and leave that they won't be able to take, and which then the state won't be able to find cover for, and if they do, it'll be very expensive to pay for.
And that was the thing, that was the point Michael McGrath made in the Dáil yesterday morning. He said that the basic cost identified by the Labour Court for awarding the 10 days holidays to health workers alone is about €377 million. But when you factor in the overtime and the agency cost of having to kind of cover all those hours and all those days, it balloons to over €500 million. You extend that to the entire public service, it's over €1 billion, Matt, like, for the 10, just to give that 10 days. So that's why you're seeing talk of, well, do we go down the line of a, of another bank holiday and increasing the minimum wage to sort of spread it out so you avoid that sort of divisiveness between public sector and private sector. The only problem by doing that is you're rewarding those who probably didn't do an awful lot during the pandemic, as well as you're rewarding those who really did deserve it, and, or sorry, who do deserve it and did go over above and beyond.
And then the cost of it, does that then impact on what Pascal Donoghue and Michael McGrath can do in the budget in a fortnight's time?
They say no, because when I was asking about this, there's basically a bit of headroom in the numbers from this year. They've underspent on it, particularly on the capital side. So they've a bit of money that they can kind of jiggy around. The expectation or the hope was that they would be able to pay for whatever measure out of this year's money rather than impacting on next year's budget. So there is some money there. However, if you get to that larger kind of cohort where you're looking at the entire public service, that's over €1 billion. So it probably will have to impact on next year's budget as well.
Is it necessarily a good thing if there's been a capital underspend as well? Because the capital is supposed to be spent on infrastructure and things that have a future benefit for the country. Yeah.
This has been a perennial problem, particularly on this government's watch. Michael McGrath apparently made the point at Cabinet last week that, you know, by August, they had still only spent 36% of their capital budget for the year. So they're way behind on what they should be spending. And therefore, that obviously, they have some capacity in the system. However, you know,
so they're way behind in spending, despite the massive overspend on the National Children's Hospital and other things.
Yeah.
So if you're overspending on those things, it would suggest that you're not spending at all on lots of other things that need to be done.
And you're looking at, they're your schools, they're your hospitals, they're your smaller, much smaller projects that, you know, are really crucial to the expansion of a lot of services that are just either been mired in kind of bureaucracy for several years. We know in terms of the housing side, it takes about 18 months to get a housing scheme approved by the Department of Housing. So there's a lot of, there's clearly log jams in the system there. But in terms of this kind of payment, it certainly has allowed a bit of flexibility in the system. But we, obviously, we're waiting to see whether or not this is announced on Budget Day, or whether, and that is all dependent on whether or not they can get agreement from the public sector unions.
Some more listener comments. Martin in Limerick. I worked through the lockdown. We went from a building site with myself, my brother and uncle to a social housing project with over 100 workers from all over Ireland and occasional international workers, mainly from the UK. I was on the PUP for 2 weeks, which sank our mortgage hopes for 6 months. I don't want more money. I just don't want to be punished for something that was out of my hands. Another one says, instead of bonus and extra holidays, why not give everyone an income tax-free December? There's an idea. The amount of money that would cost would be a multiple of actually paying the additional bonus. That ain't going to happen. And another one says, I work in the private sector in a factory making medical and food packaging parts, and I've been working the whole way through the COVID pandemic. We were classed as essential workers, but never get a mention when it comes to talking about essential workers. That's from Linda. There are lots of private sector essential workers.
And this is
workers.
The difficult, now that we knew that, because we as journalists were on that list of essential workers, so which meant we weren't, you know, we weren't precluded from leaving the house and coming into work to cover press conferences and cover the kind of the story of, yeah, of the decision making. But I don't think there's going to be many journalists looking for an additional payment or anything like it.
I don't think they'd be getting it.
Don't think we'd be getting it. But but like this difficulty of deciding as to who is important and who is not, because like we know and I know in every company, be they public or private, there were those people who really stood up to the mark during the pandemic, and there were those who went missing and, dare I say it, did. Probably sit on their sofas watching Netflix, as Mark McSherry famously said and got himself in trouble for saying so.
Thank you very much, Dan McConnell, political editor of the Irish Examiner.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today.